Teaching and learning should bring joy.
When they're really, really excited about something, you grab that and you go with it.
I was given the opportunity to teach a class of first graders, and from that day, I was hooked.
You could see the change that you can affect on kids.
I really was just passionate about making a difference through teaching.
I think you see kids and you form relationships in a way that probably nobody else ever does.
The students will enjoy what they're doing, and in the process, they learn.
You know, kids don't learn from people they don't like.
In a moment, a conversation with one of you who nominated a transformative teacher, and this, rather like yesterday's story, really was about a teacher reaching well beyond the classroom into a young woman's life. But we want to hear from some more RN presenters on teachers that really defined them, that helped them develop their love of an intellectual life, which we share with you here on Radio National. Here's Rachel Conn, presenter of The Spirit of Things.
Hi, I'm Rachel Conn from RN Spirit of Things. It's really hard to choose my favorite teacher, as I've had many. But the one who changed the course of my life was the late Greta Riddell Dixon in Toronto. She was slim and tall and wore her hair in a curious old-fashioned roll. And yet, in high contrast to her rather elegant appearance, she had a feisty passion for her subject, which was the sociology of religion. It was she who first told me about Evelyn Underhill, the 19th century British mystic and Anglo-Catholic. It was a whole new world of religious ideas and practice that was so fascinating to me, and it had real consequences for my life. It would change the course of my study for the next 6 or 7 years. You see, I was training in social work, and Mrs. Dixon, as we called her, taught us about women who changed the course of social services in England, people like Florence Nightingale, who not only changed the way patients received hospital care, but the young nurse also harbored radical religious ideas that set her apart from the Church of England norm. It was mysticism again. Although I did graduate in social services and worked in that field on and off, it was Greta Dixon who made me want to pursue further degrees in the study of religion, and one of my specialties was indeed the sociology of religion. I wouldn't have known how important that field would become as the world was in for a huge religious revolution, whose reverberations we're still feeling. Thank you, Greta.
Yes, indeed. And I feel like we've been a beneficiary of Greta too. Thank you, Rachel Conn, for sharing that story. And in fact, somewhat connected to a story you're going to hear shortly from one of our listeners. Here, though, is Anthony Fennell from RN's Future Tense, which you can catch here each Sunday at 10:30 or as podcast, of course. Anthony.
Hello, Anthony Fennell here from Future Tense. As is probably obvious from my personality and general demeanour, I experienced the full Catholic education catastrophe, caned into submission by the Sisters of the Sacred Heart, only to be handed over to the Maris brothers to be finished off. Along with the excessive guilt and discipline, I did actually learn a few things, and I had some great teachers. One that stands out was a lay teacher named Peter Hurd. He taught English and modern history. He had a good sense of humour and a strong social conscience. But the main thing I remember about Mr. Hurd was that he was a great adventurer. And as much as anyone else, he helped to instill in me a curiosity for the outside world and a love of travel.
Thanks, Anthony. Sorry, I was taking a sip of water there. Great stories from Anthony and Rachel. And of course, you can catch Rachel on The Spirit of Things each Sunday evening. Well, now we'd like to meet one of you. And yesterday we heard a very raw story, many of you were very affected by it, of how a teacher made a lifelong difference to one high school student who was being subjected to sadistic, violent abuse at the hands of her father at home. Well, Susan's a survivor, as we heard. And today, in the final of our My Favourite Teacher series, a story that equally blew us away. It's another story of a school teacher who went beyond the classroom. And Madge wrote to us, nominating Sister Gemma as the linchpin of her life. And we have on the line Madge. Good morning.
Good morning, Natasha.
We haven't been able to trace down Sister Gemma, but we got you.
Well, I won't be good, but...
Oh, you will. So take us back to 1974. You were in your last year of high school. You loved school, didn't you?
I did love school. I loved everything about school. I was the only one of five children who loved school. But yes, I did enjoy it, and I had... Sister Gemma was my teacher, my classroom teacher. She was a fairly young nun for those days, I think. I'd had mostly older nuns. But it sort of does sound a bit trite, but she was kind. Mm. Now, you do meet kind people, but I suppose she was really kind. She was truly kind, and I think that was the thing that got to me. And she loved what she was doing, and she looked at people properly, like she looked at all the kids in the class as real people.
Mm.
So, and it was a bit of a shock, like everybody was very shocked when I became pregnant.
Yes, and now you've dropped the bomb.
I know.
What happened in that last year?
Oh, it was just a terrible time, but I obviously had to leave school. It was a great disaster, a great shame, and it was a social shame as much as one at the school as well for the Catholic education system. And I was living in a rental property not far from the school. And without anything coming from me, Sister Gemma started coming down to visit me and setting me assignments and picking up my work and marking it. She wanted me to sit my end of year exam so that I would pass. And it was amazing that she did that. I thought, how come the nuns are letting her do this? Like, I don't know why they would let her do that. I never knew whether she was doing it secretly and say she was going somewhere else or whether she had approval to do it. But she did keep coming down, and I kept producing the work. Unfortunately, 10 days before the final sit, and it was a big, like, state sit for an exam, even though we were a private school, I went into labour and I had my son.
Mm.
And I lost contact with her.
You lost contact with her. Let's just go back a bit, though, because... It's difficult now for young women to understand how truly shunned, how punitive families and the education system and community and church were of young unwed mothers, of teen mothers. So you weren't living at home when you became pregnant. What happened?
Oh, yes, I was. Well, I was living at home.
Okay.
Yes, I was with my father. My mother was had schizophrenia, so she was... living in another house, and my father had all the children, and he was doing what he could. But he was also having a new house built because he had another partner, and they planned to marry and move into the new house. So they did move into the new house, but I was left at the rental property. It was such a shameful thing, and I was expected to have a termination quietly, be sent away somewhere. But I suppose having been brought up Catholic, they'd instilled in me absolutely that that's not something you do. So I couldn't do that. I wouldn't do that.
So the option was to give your baby up for adoption.
That's right, yeah.
And you took that option. I mean, it wasn't really an option at the time for young women. You really had to fight to keep a child if you were in the Catholic system.
Oh, absolutely. And especially with the people that we were, the social level that we're on, you just didn't do that. And there were ways of getting around it, so that was probably the best option. I did, originally the baby's father was there, and I had thought that I would keep him, and I'd even bought some nappies and things like that.
Mm.
But he left, and there really wasn't, I didn't know how I could do it. So in the end, my family convinced me to put him up for adoption and then leave. So he was born and I was moved interstate.
What was that like for you?
Oh, it is still very, very strong in my mind that I left, and every day that I woke up, I remember, was just this agony. And I was a very obedient child, very obedient, very... I still was a child in many ways, still... Mm. I didn't know how to clean a toilet or cook or do anything. I was hopeless. And I felt, in the end, I knew that something was going to give. I just was stretched beyond anything. So I didn't tell anyone. I just got on a plane and went to the hospital in Melbourne. I remember walking up the the street, and all the Hare Krishnas were there trying to sort of latch on to you, you know, sort of convince you that, you know, you could come and live with them and things. But I had nothing for him. And to this day, I still have the little blanket that I bought him, took him from the hospital in with the QV insignia on it. And I've shown that to him. But anyway, so I picked him up. They were actually quite good. You had 30 days in those days to decide. They did call a social worker who tried very hard to get me not to take him. But and you get left with this tremendous sense of guilt that if you do take them, you're then responsible for the quality of their life, rest of their lives.
What did Sister Gemma do at this point? How did she wrap herself around your reality in a way that no one else did? This teacher of yours, this high school teacher of yours.
Well, Sister Gemma, as I said, I lost contact once I had, you know, I was sent interstate. But during that whole, would have been 7 months that she was coming and visiting, the only way I can explain it to you is that she saw me. I was like a real person to her. It didn't matter to her that I was pregnant, whereas everyone else was treating me like I was this pariah and that I was immoral and all these things that I just wasn't. And she didn't pay any attention to that. She smiled at me in the same way. She touched my hand in the same way. She gave me the work and she encouraged me every step. And she was just always kind.
Mm. I wonder what response her peers would have given her for reaching out to you.
I don't know. That's the sad thing, isn't it? Today I work in a museum and I do it as part of my work. I do exhibitions where I tell people's stories. And the sad thing for me because your stories came up, was that I thought, I don't know her story. I don't know why such a young, passionate woman became a nun. I did, when I graduated as a teacher, I found out that she had gone to South America as a missionary, and I got her contact details and wrote to her.
And
I thought, and she wrote back. And she wrote back to say, I just said to her, you know, this is the path. You set me on this path, and even though it got disrupted, I'm here. You know, I arrived, and I want you to know that what you did got me here. And I have my son with me, and life is just so good. And it came back with all this sort of blacked out. It must have come from somewhere where they had censorship or something. And that was the last I heard, and I was never able to contact her after that.
So you just mentioned that you gave your son up for adoption, but in your nomination to us, you said it was Sister Gemma that gave you the courage and the fortitude to track down your son and get him back.
Well, because she let me believe in myself. She made me believe that I was an individual person who could have things that I wanted and make decisions that I wanted. I hadn't been that. I hadn't done that growth away from family where you suddenly, you're no longer a child, you become an adult. I hadn't taken that step. So I was going along with what the family wanted and what was expected in my society was to give him up and go away and get over it and come back and pick up my life. But she saw me as someone completely individual and encouraged it and gave me this sense that I am me in this world, just me standing here, that I don't have to be beholden to anybody out there. I can choose what I want. And that's ultimately when I made the decision to get on that plane and come back, that's what made me do that. That's the idea that I was based on. I've not had that before.
What was being reunited with your son like at that age?
Oh, it was just right. That's all I can say. It was just so perfectly right to pick him up and walk out that door of that hospital, catch the tram, and it was just absolutely okay finally, you know, after all that stuff. Because it would have been, I think it was close on 3 weeks that I lasted before I went back and got him. So I was getting close to, you know, D-Day. But it was just Jess. And he is the most, he is the best person. Both my children are very nice people, very good people. And I like them as much as I love them, I think. So I've been very lucky. He could have been atrocious, but he wasn't.
Well, it's always the gamble of being a parent.
That's right. I never talk about other people's children because of that.
Madge, in fact, you became a teacher. I mean, what you're recounting here, I know many people will be listening to the radio and they were in the very same situation and they weren't able to keep their children, and there's so much heartbreak, even right up until the 70s, you know. My mother was in this situation too, and incredible judgment. And here we are today to live to tell the tale. But you became a teacher.
I did. Because of that whole thing about being seen. And I thought, children need that. They need to be seen by someone else so that it reinforces their solidarity, their who they are. Like, if you're always just glancing across kids, they don't feel particularly real. So you have to rest your eye on them and go, and they see themselves then, they feel themselves sort of solidify in front of you. I've seen it happen with children when I was teaching. So, and that's one of the, when I went for my scholarship, when I had to go back to school and do the final year. That was the year after my son was born.
But with the baby in arms.
I know, that was very amazing. A lot of people didn't. I remember once I was late for class because we had inoculations for babies, and I gave my reason for being late, and she didn't believe me, so she gave me detention.
Oh.
And she didn't believe me. But anyway, so I, for my scholarship, when we had to go to an interview to get that, and I had said that this is the reason I gave for why I wanted to become a teacher, and I won a scholarship to go to uni, so that was really amazing.
And went on to work with children with disabilities before your museum work now.
Yes, children mainly with learning disabilities, reading problems. Yeah, it's a wonderful, like teaching. That's why I love what you've done with this program, because we forget how important the teachers are. And I think a lot of people now will have read through those stories and it'll just make them think again on just what these people contribute to people's lives.
Nearly 500 nominations, and part of the motivation for me, Madge, was that often it's very hard to get interviews with teachers within education systems because the gatekeepers are there, if you like.
Exactly.
So this is a way of bringing those voices to the airwaves. And thank you so much for helping us do that today with your story. And look, do you want us to help? Do you want us to put a call out and find out if anyone's related to Sister Gemma? Do you want to name the school?
I want to know her story.
So what was the school?
I think she would be the one. It was Chavon College in Burwood in Melbourne.
Okay. And it was Sister Gemma, and it was 1974.
Yes.
So just say the name of the college again.
Chavon College.
Chavon. How do you spell it?
Chavoin. I don't think it's there anymore. I've tried.
Okay, 1974, Sister Gemma. She became a missionary in South America.
Yes.
And we wonder if she ever made it home. And
yes,
we would love to hear from you. So please email the Life Matters account. Go to the Life Matters homepage, abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters. You can email us from there. We would love to hear from you. Or you can tweet me at Natasha Mitchell. And over summer, I'll be in touch with you at Natasha Mitchell. Madge, thank you so much for your nomination and congratulations to you and your son. For sticking together.
Thank you for your program.
Thank you. It's Madge, and we would love to find Sister Gemma, or at least find out what happened to her after she became a missionary in South America.